This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Wednesday, March 13th. I'm Gavin McGough.
And I'm Julia Caulfield.
In today's headlines, big questions make for slow progress on town rental guidelines.
Telluride talks Carhenge Lift 7 development.
Town offices to get an overhaul.
And a mountain weather forecast. But first, KOTO DJs are members of the coolest fellowship in Telluride, and they fuel the spirit of the station by keeping it fun and funky. Donate to your favorite show on KOTO by going to KOTO.org. And thank you!
Ain't no rest for the wicked. The Telluride's Housing Authority Subcommittee has been hard at work over the last few months with a comprehensive update to its rental guidelines. Work continued last week at their monthly meeting. Town Legal Counsel Alex Slayton says they're closing in on a much-anticipated first draft.
This is a continuation of conversations that have occurred at the last few meetings. The goal of today is really to get those questions answered at the end of the staff memo. If we can get these questions answered today, it's my hope that I'll have a first draft of the rental policies to you at the next meeting.
Those questions and the ensuing policies will have a direct impact on the thousands of folks living in or on a wait list for town housing. Should there be a limit on someone's total assets and savings if they want to rent from town? What should the work requirement be in terms of hours? The subcommittee begins with a big one. Should there be an outright income cap for tenants of town housing? On that last question, Housing Subcommittee member Dan Enright says no.
The realities of what the free market in Telluride is, I think, make that very complicated at this time. The least expensive free market unit in Telluride is around $800,000 or so for a small two-bedroom. Last time I looked, I could be slightly off on that.
Enright's fear is that Telluride's lack of options for middle-class buyers or renters means many residents of town's affordable housing have nowhere else to go, even when they make a good, high salary. Other committee members understand Enright's concerns, but they remind him the town can set the cap where they see fit. Here's committee member Mian Fee.
Let's run some numbers. Are you okay with people making $500,000 and living in Shandoka?
Ellen 11 agrees they should look at a high, hard cap.
We need to have something, like a stop in place. If somebody can afford to pay $3,000 a month in rent instead of living in Shandoka, we can free up a unit for someone who can't afford $3,000 in rent.
Committee members take up another issue, which has proven contentious. Should Telluride charge higher income earners more than lower income earners for similar units? On this question, Enright says no again, unless the tenant is offered a nicer unit to match the higher cost.
They are given a choice, two things, like we discussed at the last meeting. You move to this other unit that is more suitable to your life circumstances, or if you choose not to take that, then your rent goes up to a proportional amount of what you would pay at that other unit.
Such a situation, though it sounds ideal, would require the town to have a diverse mix of units and a vast rental pool, something which is decades away, if it ever arrives. Much of the conversation saw committee members spinning their wheels, circling around and around. Concerns over removing residents from town housing clashed with the need to create equitable, reasonable guidelines. Discussion was impassioned.
I don't want to kick anybody out of their housing, but I want to create a policy where we are not being arbitrary. Dan?
I'm not talking about being arbitrary. I'm having to look at this long term. So many people have no other options. And the town is coming in and saying, well, you're making more. You're trying to do everything we're all told to do. Well, guess who's taking more of that? The government.
Current town guidelines for renters are so out of sync with Telluride's economic reality that town has more or less given up on enforcing them. Fee pleads for more data, more information, more choices, and more pathways forward. Because, she says, town needs policies that work.
And if the policy is, we don't have income limits, we don't have leases, stay as long as you'd like, here's a breadbasket,
That's fine, but we need to be making an informed decision. And it can't just be, I don't want to kick people out, so we're not going to look at the numbers. We have to look at the data and then decide what makes the most sense for everyone. Because I do also just want to call out the fact that there are 700 people on the wait list.
Staff promises to return next month with some of the data FEE is requesting, including potential income tiers and their related lease rates, and an assessment of how different salary caps, say $250,000, $500,000 a year, would affect town's current tenants. The Telluride Housing Subcommittee is comprised of 4 members of Town Council. Once the subcommittee and town staff create a working draft for the rental policy, it'll eventually be seen by the full Telluride Housing Authority, which is comprised of all of town council.
In the Box Canyon, land is a valuable thing. The town of Telluride, along with the Telluride Ski and Golf Resort, have a chunk of it at the base of Lift 7 and the Carhenge parking lot. And the entities are looking to develop it.
We're not here to present you concepts or preconceived ideas. This is really a conversation about what should this land hold. There's some ideas between the partners about what they would like to see. But before we start putting buildings or forms or circulation, let's just talk about it and the opportunities.
That's Darla Calloway with Design Workshop, an urban planning company working with the town and Telski. This week, Calloway hosted 2 information meetings to get feedback from the community on what they'd like to see go in at Carhenge, Lift 7, and the Cimarron Lodge area. While all ideas are open, Calloway notes the conversation isn't starting from scratch.
You guys as a community thought about portions of this land in the past through the Southwest Area Plan, and some of the key highlights for Carhenge, you thought about this as having a place for workforce housing. Maybe 220 to 300 housing units, 15 to 20,000 square feet of locally serving or neighborhood commercial. The idea for lodging, the idea for playgrounds and pocket parks. So this isn't about starting from scratch. This is a springboard moment of taking the Southwest Area Plan, taking the new tract-wide land into account and moving those type of ideas forward.
The Tract Y land is the area owned by Telski at Lift 7. Throughout the presentation, Calloway asks those in the room and on Zoom to answer a number of survey questions, like what land uses are most appropriate for the neighborhood? Who should the development on the land prioritize? What are the top priorities for the area? Survey results, collecting data from only around 35 people, show that the land should be used for residential use, parking, open space, and locally serving commercial. There should be a focus on pedestrian and traffic flow. Here's George Harvey. He lives in the area.
There's a lot of children, kids that live down in the Bachman area, and they walk to school every day. And for the last 25 years, I've been scared to death that an accident's going to happen. All of the driveways, the sidewalk is actually part of our driveway. I can't emphasize enough, we are lucky that accident hasn't happened yet.
When it comes to housing, Ellen Levin is excited to see more units go in. Levin serves on town council but will recuse herself as she lives in the neighborhood. She spoke at the meeting as a resident.
I'm someone who lives in this area, and I am so excited to have more neighbors. I live in a sea of short-term rentals, and I am thrilled that some of my friends might live next door to me.
But with more housing, Scott Walker wants the town and Telski to think about amenities for those who already live there.
I think the commercial space is really important. Adding 200 more housing or 200 more rooms there for additional folks to move in is great, but that's going to create a strain as to all the amenities that we enjoy there. It'd be nice to have more restaurants and things like that. So I think it's important when we think about affordable housing to also think about amenities for the existing residents that live there. Now we can incorporate both and not overlook the commercial to try to maximize and jam as many units in as we can.
Cami Nichols agrees when it comes to neighborhood elements.
The open space around Chair 7 is a really popular community space. It's sort of an unofficial dog park at the moment. So, maybe make some official park area there to maintain that open because that's a big part of the community there, I think, too, is the open space around it.
The community meetings were only the first step in the process of developing the Carhenge Lift 7 area. The town of Telluride will update information on the project at engagetelluride.org.
Telluride's town offices are scattered across the Box Canyon. There's Town Hall, of course, Rebecca Hall, where council currently meets. The Marshalls are tucked behind Ace Hardware. Parks and Rec has some office space over in Town Park. But none of these, says Assistant Town Manager Zoe Janal, are particularly impressive. In fact, they're downright lacking. And town is looking at a whole-scale update.
This has been obviously a much-needed project for anyone that has visited the municipal offices for the town of Telluride.
Telluride has tried again and again since 1998 to revamp its office space and renew its facilities. But it's always kicked the can down the road.
So we've now done this 5 times, starting in 1998, looking at a public facilities plan. So the conversations of the need to enhance the office space for future growth, for efficiencies, not only for staff, but for the public, for upkeep of these buildings, and so on and so forth, has been reprioritized several times now.
Recently, a pair of architecture firms completed a master plan for the town to determine its future facility needs and design a solution to the decades-old problem. Danal and the architects came before town council this week to present 3 possible scenarios for moving forward. Jessica Gunther with HOK Architects introduces the first scheme.
Scenario A is an all-renovation scenario. So there's no new building in scenario A. There is an addition to town hall, but the rest of the buildings show renovated space.
Scenario B presents a slightly more ambitious option with a total rebuild of Rebecca Hall and a renovation of facilities at Parks and Rec, the Marshalls building, and town hall.
And then the final scenario, scenario C, is a new build at the Fruin site, the county property, with renovations to Town Hall, Rebecca Hall, Parks and Rec.
That Fruin building, also known as the County Annex, is adjacent to San Miguel County's offices on the west end of Main Street. It currently houses some commercial space along with the Angel Baskets food pantry. An empty lot out back could be prime real estate for a new building shared between the county and Telluride. Pretty quickly, Scenario C rises to the top of the list for town council members. Here's Geneva Chanette.
It saves taxpayer money to not have to be supporting 2 new buildings, instead 1 new building between the county and the town, which is good.
The plan would also move the Marshalls and their parking to Rebecca Hall, freeing up the current Marshall building, a historic and unique structure originally built as the town library. Chanette continues.
Relocating the Marshalls building out of downtown is something that we must do if possible. And here's a possible avenue for that. I think that with Voodoo creating a lot more density on that corner, pulling something out is the correct next step and dealing with some of the parking issues. And I can think of a million things we could do with the Marshalls building that are cooler than Marshall.
Chanette's point is not that the Marshalls are uncool, she clarifies. It's just their historic building could become a great community space. Scenario C is the clear winner in other ways. It has the most potential to house the long-term growth of town staff. It co-locates offices for the convenience of the public, and it adds the most square footage. Where it doesn't win is on cost. A very initial estimate puts the project at $12.3 million, nearly $5 million more than Scenario A. And, says Danal, town doesn't have those funds locked and loaded.
Right now, when we look at our capital reserves, those are going toward other critical infrastructures like wastewater, gondola. So we don't currently have the funding set aside for this project. It's going to have to be a future ask, most likely, of the public in one way or the other.
But, says Denal, she'll move forward with Scenario C.
My next step will be starting to meet with the county to understand those details a little bit more so that we can define that design and move forward to get those cost estimates.
The 26 years since 1998 is a long time to wait for a new office. But as plans move forward, Telluride hopes to make that vision, at long last, a reality.
The Telluride Fringe Festival is returning for its second weekend. The festival, put on by Telluride Theater, highlights smaller, weirder, and creative works of art from across the community. Coming up in the second weekend is Who Are the People in Your Neighborhood? A live talk show with different guests and performers each night. The show will run Thursday through Sunday at different times. There's the Clam Jam Comedy Night featuring local comedians Marissa Mattis and Catherine Seifer. They'll take the stage on Thursday and Sunday. And Prep School Musical, a musical by Sam Foreman and Sean Mahoney, will run on Friday and Saturday. Throughout the weekend, there will also be art, installations, and experiences, including Fluxus Museum, Elegy for Forgotten Selves, Sunshine Bursts, and Your Family Photos. The Telluride Fringe Festival runs Thursday, March 14th through Sunday, March 17th at the Palm Theater. Tickets are available at telluridetheater.org and at the door.
Molly Kawahata's career spans climbing and climate, policy and perseverance. A former advisor to the Obama administration on climate issues and an accomplished mountaineer, Kawahata's expedition into the remote Alaska range is now the subject of the film Scale of Hope, which is showing this Thursday at the Wilkinson Library. Kawahata will join the event via Zoom for a Q&A. The screening is a collaboration between a handful of local environmental groups, EcoAction Partners, the Sheep Mountain Alliance, the San Miguel Watershed Coalition, all alongside the library. The event speaks to the power of hope, the ability of individual choices to make change, and organizers note it falls in International Women's Month, bringing special attention to diverse perspectives in the outdoors. Scale of Hope will screen Thursday, March 14th at 6:30 p.m. at the Wilkinson Library. There will be snacks and refreshments on hand and giveaways from Telluride's Patagonia.
Republican U.S. Representative Ken Buck announced on Tuesday he's leaving Congress on March 22nd. A few months ago, Buck said he would retire at the end of his term. He told CNN he's stepping down early, in part because of how dysfunctional Congress is right now.
It is the worst year of the 9 years and 3 months that I've been in Congress. And having talked to former members, it's the worst year in 40, 50 years to be in Congress.
Buck represents Colorado's 4th Congressional District. A special election will decide who will carry out the rest of Buck's term. Governor Jared Polis set that date for June 25th to coincide with the state primaries. Buck's early departure complicates the ongoing race to take over his seat next year.
As the interstate negotiations over Colorado River water continue, a federal commission is acknowledging its trust responsibility to tribes in the Upper Basin. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Clark Adamitis of KSUT and KSJD has more.
The Upper Colorado River Commission, which manages water resources across state borders, is offering an agreement with the 7 tribes in the Upper Colorado River Basin. The commission is promising to meet with tribes every 2 months. Peter Ortego is general counsel for the Ute Mountain Ute tribe.
The MOU is intended to give tribes greater participation in decisions of the UCRC. It makes sure that tribes are notified of important meetings, that tribes are able to participate in decision-making. Ann Castle, as the federal representative, has acknowledged that she's a trust responsibility to tribes.
Over the last century, tribal nations in the Colorado Basin have been left out of negotiations and often do not receive their share of water. Ortego says putting the agreement in writing removes any legal gray area regarding what the U.S. must provide to tribes as trustee.
we need to make sure that we do this in writing so that it carries on through the next generation of UCRC members.
The Upper Colorado River Commission has recommended the agreement to the seven tribes for their approval. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
Last week, the Wyoming State Legislature passed a bill banning most gender-affirming care for minors. This came just over a week after residents of Jackson held a vigil to honor a non-binary teenager from Oklahoma whose recent death has resonated across the country. Nex Benedict died in late February after reportedly being beaten by a group of girls in a high school bathroom, though law enforcement are still investigating the cause of death. Dozens of people in Jackson recently gathered in the freezing cold to honor Nex's life and bring attention to legislation that may dial back more rights of LGBTQ plus people and kids in the U.S. and Wyoming. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KHOL's Hannah Merzbach has more.
Surrounded by rainbow flags and signs that say protect our children is 13-year-old Augie Henry, who identifies as non-binary or gender fluid. They say Nex Benedict's death hit close to home.
I've been bullied for my gender identity for almost ever since I came out, and school districts aren't actually that good at stopping bullies.
Standing near the Elk Antler Arch in the center of Jackson, Augie, a middle school student, says they've been reading up on studies that show targeting gender-diverse youth like them can lead to increased depression and risk of suicide.
If it doesn't change, things like this are just going to keep happening.
Augie and their mom, Kira Griffith, say they're queer people across Teton County. And just recently, Augie had a 13th birthday party where several of the guests identified as non-binary.
It was important, I think, to have that represented in our community where it doesn't always feel like in rural Wyoming that we have that queer pride going on here, but it is here in our community.
But that community could be getting smaller. Griffith says they've seen families with gender-diverse youth leave the region in the last year, seeking care in other states like Colorado that they say have more accepting policies. Griffith says her family is staying in Jackson for now.
I'm able at this point to protect my child, but I don't know how long that'll last.
The vigil for Nex Benedict was put together by Cheyenne Sievertson, a prominent advocate for Teton County's queer community, who's handing out candles.
There really aren't sufficient words. There's nothing I could say to make what happened to this child okay.
Sievertson is a local therapist for gender-diverse youth and organized the vigil with Jackson Hole Pride. She says she's worried that more queer kids like Nex Benedict may die if more isn't done to help protect them.
What was happening on the local policy levels and the national and state policy levels all contributed to the death of this child.
Sievertson says in recent years, state legislatures around the country have seen a steady flow of bills impacting gender-diverse kids.
So, while it is heartbreaking, shocking, devastating, it is exactly what will happen when we target this population and we let these kids down. They get hurt. They die.
Wyoming and other states recently made it illegal for transgender girls to participate on female sports teams. And across the country, there have been sweeping efforts to limit gender-affirming healthcare access. Sievertson says this kind of rhetoric has real impacts on the youth she works with in therapy and support groups.
A lot is happening that makes their world scarier and smaller. They're afraid of their community, they're afraid of their country, and still, like any of us, want to be able to be themselves.
Mars William Silva waves a pink and blue flag, the transgender colors, on the corner of Broadway and Cash, with the glowing cowboy bar sign in the background. Silva, who's gay, says his friends are all sitting inside across the street, warm at a local restaurant, but he chose to be out here.
The least I can do is be uncomfortable in the cold, standing out here in the middle of the town that I love.
Silva says he owes it to his trans brothers and sisters to be outside, standing up and protesting against the people targeting LGBTQ plus rights.
We gotta love, and that's what I'll do. With my hands freezing, holding this flag up.
With a smile on his face, Silva greets locals and tourists crossing the busy intersection during the vigil.
Have a great day, gentlemen. Thank you. You guys have a great night.
What's the flag for, if you don't mind me asking?
Just standing here for other people who I want to represent.
Nice.
Who can't represent themselves sometimes.
All right, well, I appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir. Have a great day.
As ungloved hands go numb, the group starts to disperse for the night. And middle school student Augie Henry says being around supporters tonight is a really good distraction from reality.
Just because this stuff's happening, don't be scared to be who you are. Even though it's bad, still just power through it. More gender diverse and more people who show who they are, the better.
Rolling up their pride flags and blowing out the candles lit around the picture of Next Benedict, advocates say they'll continue standing up for trans youth and that they're not going quiet anytime soon. For KHWL News, I'm Hannah Merzbach.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for snow tonight, heavy at times with a low around 20 degrees. Thursday and Thursday night, expect snow to continue with a high around freezing and a low around 20 degrees. Possible accumulations for the next 36 hours range from 5 to 10 inches. The storm system lingers Friday and into Friday night with more snow and wind gusts reaching 30 miles per hour. The Friday high is near 35 degrees with an overnight low around 25. This has been the news for Wednesday, March 13th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206.
We would like to thank everyone who has donated to CODO during our Winter Fund Drive. A huge thank you to
Jenny Wheeler,
Stephen Barrett,
Annie Caulfield,
Chris Fish and Mackenzie Brewer,
Teresa Connesnecht and Rob Whiting,
Dave Johnson,
Christopher Jones,
Clyde Post Pallone,
Evan McMillan,
Kathleen Erie,
Mike Balzer,
Doug Tooley,
Jeremy Freymoyer,
Steve Zimmerman,
Devin Wilson,
DJ Rick and Madeline Gomez,
Matthew Harvey,
Max Yancey,
Carol Wilder,
Greg Williams,
Ellen Grubel,
Allie Griswold,
Drew Kramer,
Posey Hedges,
Jonna Wenzel,
Seth and Allie Weatherford,
Cindy Kilgore,
Nathan Jones,
Christopher Norton,
David and Nancy Platt,
Thomas Taylor,
John Vogel,
and Tommy Toons.
Thank you all so much. And now, a personal commentary.
Maria Stark here. I'm a volunteer circulator of a petition to put Measure 89 on the November ballot. Measure 89 would amend the Colorado Constitution to protect reproductive freedom across Colorado. You may think reproductive rights are safe in Colorado. Not entirely true. Anti-choice activists have tried and will continue to try to limit reproductive rights at the state and local level, including fairly recently in Pueblo. Also, state insurance programs are prohibited by the state constitution from covering abortion even in cases of rape, incest, or protection of the health of the pregnant person. Measure 89 would fix this. How can you help? You can come find me in the Telluride room at the Wilkinson Library during two time slots. You just need to be registered to vote within the state of Colorado. So I'll be at the library on March 21st, Thursday, from noon to 1, so lunch hour, and March 23rd, a Saturday, for après-ski from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Those times, again, are March 21st, Thursday, lunchtime, noon to 1. March 23rd, a Saturday, 3 to 4:30 p.m. So join me during one of these times to sign the petition and let your voice be heard.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you'd like to comment, please contact a staff person here at CODO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.